Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
We trending. We have Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake podcast and our regular TV and streaming contributor each Monday. And Lorca Nyan, head of training at the Communications Clinic with us. You're very welcome, both of you. Let's start, Elaine, with the Electoral Commission recommending that the addresses of candidates should be removed from the ballot papers at elections. Why are they suggesting this?
Yeah, so it's kind of a matter of safety of those candidates. So this has been flagged by Women for Election, as well as the Oireachtas Task Force report on safe participation in political life. It's found that abuse in politics seems to be particularly disproportionately targeted at women or minority groups. And if you are someone who's being targeted for harassment, having your home address being publicly available, publicly displayed, can cause some risk and some danger there. So the addresses are provided for verification purposes when someone puts themselves forward for nomination. But what's been recommended now is that that doesn't mean it also has to be included on the ballot paper itself. They can be used for the verification purposes, but it's advisable to probably remove them from the ballot in future. And it is just a recommendation for now, but I think it is probably one that will be picked up.
Yeah, indeed, Lorca Nyan, is this just common sense?
It is common sense. It's common sense, particularly for the new era. Look, going back to the foundation of this state, addresses have been on the ballot paper, so there is a tradition and a culture for it. But, I mean, as wild as it might seem, given the history of this country in terms of our politics, in terms of, you know, threats that might have been made, there are more threats and more harassment made against politicians in modern times than there might have been in the 50s and 60s with the IRA or even in the 20s and 30s,
In the 20s and 30s, politicians used to get murdered.
Yeah, and yet there's significantly, actually, they haven't got murdered in Ireland, they have elsewhere, but there are significantly more death threats in recent times. So, look, I think it is common sense. It is sad, though. Because one of the joys of Irish politics has been the local connection that people have had, that, you know, like senior politicians still live in housing estates, that people can walk around. People tend to leave politicians alone, but that is quite clearly creeping away. And UCD had research relatively recently where they talked to all TDs and senators, okay? And 94% of politicians in Ireland said they've been targeted for abuse and harassment. 94%, that's 72% of staff members, of Oireachtas members, have been abused or harassed. And 89% of TDs, so almost 9 in 10 TDs, said they've been made feel anxious and afraid by some of the harassment they have gotten. So the harassment that politicians are subject to was really significant. Now, I mean, a lot of that is due to the online world that we live in, but I mean, this is probably one practical step that you could take. It's sad, it's a necessary step to take, but a practical step that might make them feel slightly safer. But I do think in general we need to just, like, the quality of politician we are going to get is going to plummet. I mean, we've already seen in the US and the UK, the quality of person in public life in those countries pales in comparison to what they had historically, in terms of just pure ability, integrity, presence. That's going to happen here. Some would argue it already has, but that's for other people to argue. But that's going to happen here if we don't do something. It will take new legislation to make this happen, though, and I don't think politicians are going to like the idea of bringing forward that legislation.
Okay, let's talk about something positive. Elaine, how much was the mood of the country, do you think, lifted by what happened in Hungary last Sunday?
Well, I can tell you that I happened to pass through Dublin City Centre that night. So obviously the match was in the afternoon and it felt very Italian 90 vibes out there. I was 4 years old in Italian 90, but that's what it gave me the sense of. And
sorry, Elaine, O'Connell Street in 1990, as well as having the Irish team coming back in the celebrations, there's a famous photograph of during the penalty shootout against Romania where O'Connell Street is empty. There's nobody on it.
Well, what was happening later that night was there was people being pretty jubilant around about. I could hear people playing Horselips. I could hear people playing back the footage over and over again of the three goals that Troy Pyre scored. I could hear shouts of ole, ole. Like, it was a really jubilant atmosphere. And it was just really, really wonderful. We don't have wins like that very often. Like, it's really remarkable to think that Troy Pyre was only born the last time we were in a World Cup. So that's how long
in Portugal,
it's been.
That long.
Yeah, he's 23 years old.
In Japan, so Korea.
His living memory does not involve us competing in a World Cup, and he's the one who may have just given us a chance to get there.
Indeed. Lorcan, I met you at the Portugal game last week, and I know you're as much of a rugby fan as you are a football fan, but I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that there is something about football which tends to get the collective mood going more than other sports.
Well, look, there's no bandwagon on which I will not jump, Matt, but I jumped on this bandwagon a little earlier than the Portugal game, thankfully for my own integrity, but it's joyous. There is nothing more magnificent for the country than when the football team is going well, particularly when you look at the lows that they managed to bring us to. And so the comparison from where we were to where we are now, there is something about it. I think it's representation in many ways, and that everybody can see themselves in the Irish football team. It's also nostalgia, and nostalgia is a very terrifying thing, but it's a wonderful feeling as well. So you tie into the historic joys of the past. And like, I am a massive, massive fan of sport. I'm a massive believer in the seriousness of sport, the impact it has on people's lives, on people's health, but just on the joy that it can bring to people day to day. I think people try to diminish it, and people try to make it seem like it is a trivial thing, and it is not a trivial thing.
Well, as the listener says, sorry to be a grumpy old so-and-so, but you swear we won the World Cup, calm down, all we did is get through to some playoffs.
No. Simply will not calm down.
but also, like, we're a small country, and if you try to logic yourself through most of life, you can logic yourself into misery. All right, this is not misery. A last minute winner, to still be alive, to still be going, to still be in with a chance of having an absolutely glorious summer. I mean, like, we have to sometimes just forget about logic, forget about cynicism, forget about trying to be the smartest person in the room or the smartest texter into the show, and just realize, you know, something. Sometimes we can just be happy, and this is something to be happy. And Dublin Zoo naming the parrot Troy Parrot is great, all right? And so more of that, more whimsy, more joy. Sport is one of the few things that can bring it to us, and we need a bit of it every now and then.
So the cockatoo, it's been called Troy, I presume, rather than parrot.
Troy, yeah. Parrot, yeah. Which reminds me of the famous one for, and my favourite one from a number of years ago, when Usain Bolt was at his peak, where there was a horse named Usain Colt, which I really enjoyed.
And
I think the other parrot is named after Katie McCabe. So everybody is being represented.
Okay, so the first playoff game, assuming we can win it to get to the second playoff game, which will be at home in Dublin, is away in Prague against Czechia. And of course, this has brought up the predictable story of supply and demand and airline prices going up and people accusing the airlines of rip-off.
Yeah, the prices skyrocketed, if you'll forgive the pun there. So before the draw was announced on Thursday, you could have gotten a return flight to Prague from Ryanair for €190 going from the Wednesday to the Friday, which would have brought you over for the game. And after that was announced that it was going to be Prague that we would be heading to, it was over €300 for one leg of that flight to go over, and it looked like about €277 coming back. Now, I know from my partner trying to get those tickets for himself that they were actually changing in the live experience. So you could actually get to checkout, and then before you could complete the checkout, like, you've gotten to the last phase of the process where you were just confirming the checkout, and then it says, actually, no, these tickets are no longer available at this price. Go back to the start. And he had to do that twice.
So it's a bit dynamic pricing, like for Oasis at Croke Park.
So dynamic that midway through the process, you're being told, actually, go back to the start. We can't let you outsmart our system by having logged on earlier to try and get these flights. So I know that he's going indirect via KLM. So that's an option if you want to keep it a bit cheap.
Okay, and is it a lot cheaper?
It is much cheaper than going direct. The direct flights are the ones that really jumped up, but if you are flying indirect, it's still a little bit cheaper.
And then staying over for a night or two?
No, that's the part that's probably going to really cause them to take part in a queue outside of a credit union.
Just to keep going that night. Just to keep going. You don't need a hotel. You don't need accommodation. Power through.
If you're going over there, will you even get a ticket to the game? Like, that Fortuna Stadium doesn't have a huge capacity. It's like got about 19,000 capacity. They're talking about possibly as low as 800 tickets for Irish fans being made available. And if they try and compete for tickets from the Czech fans, they'll be wise to that as well. So they'll be trying to compete for a small number of tickets, it looks like.
So could it be that they'll end up watching the game in Irish bars in Prague?
And yeah. There are worse places to be, I'd say, than watching Ireland in the playoff in Prague. Look, Dynamic pricing has always been there. There's some element that it's almost part of the experience. You know, to mention my rugby fan, as many days I've been outside Thomond Park, you know, frantically trying to see which European city is kind of near where the playoff, where the game might be, the quarterfinal might be, and how will we get there, and what terrain or what camper van can you rent to get down there. But I was looking it up to kind of the history of dynamic pricing, and I suppose it's never any harm to remind this country that not everything is as black and white as we think it is. One of the examples that comes up and gets cited is hotel prices in Dublin for royal visits down the years, where that's one of the case studies for hotels doing dynamic pricing. Such was the demand to see Queen Elizabeth on the streets of Dublin and to have a window where you could see down and see the procession in 1900, that hotels actually advertised and said that there was royal visit tariffs and prices are subject to changes due to demand. So, I mean, big events, I don't know if I suppose ironically, the royal visits to the streets of Dublin were big events, even 16 years before the rising, have always led to dynamic pricing. Now, that doesn't mean that they should. It doesn't mean that it's right. I would prefer if it didn't, particularly for something that is important, like Irish football is. But politicians coming out and criticising it, I find a little bit eye-rolly if you're not going to do anything about it. Like, if you want to go back to fixed fares like we had with Aer Lingus in the 60s or the 70s and put forward the legislation to say that, if not, this is the model that we've signed up to, and of course that's what's going to happen.
We need to take a break. We'll be back with more of the week trending with Lorcan Nyan and Elaine Burke after this.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Okay, back with the week trending. And of course, it has been a big week out of the United States. And Donald Trump, when we heard in the news headlines, putting pressure on Ukraine again to fall in line with a very dodgy Russian suggestion for ending the war. But the week started, there's so much stuff, the Saudi Arabian stuff, Elaine. But then, particularly the comments he made to a journalist from Bloomberg on Air Force One, where he went, quiet, quiet, piggy. What did you make of that?
It's a bit par for the course from this guy, to be totally honest. Like, it's not completely shocking when Donald Trump does it. All of his behaviour points toward this type of behaviour continuing and being normalised in public life. I can't imagine how it felt like to be Catherine Lucy in that situation. Like, as well as, like, the insulting words, so his manner also was quite menacing. Threatening. He moved towards her. He leaned over into her. He's a very tall, broad-shouldered man. He can be quite menacing, I'd imagine, if you're on the receiving end of that. And pointing his finger in her face, saying, quiet, piggy, because she was asking questions about the Epstein files, essentially. So he's clearly becoming increasingly belligerent with some of the press. He picks and chooses who he favours when it comes to the US press, and certainly anyone who leans left, he has a lot of unkind words for them. And yeah, in that White House press conference where they had Mohammed bin Salman in the room and a reporter was asking about the murdering and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, he was basically telling that woman from ABC, Mary Bruce, you're a terrible person and a terrible reporter. Like, instead of actually addressing any of the things that she was raising, he attacks her personally.
He gave MBS, as he's known, a free pass, essentially. Don't be insulting our guest. He knew nothing of it, despite the fact that the CIA had decided during the time of Trump's first time in office. Not under Joe Biden, but the CIA under Trump had decided that he was directly involved in ordering the murder.
He also tried to diminish the entire story. He was kind of saying, like, effectively, we moved on for that. Like, we're over it. Let's not talk about that anymore. And that is his MO. He's only really going to speak to things that are to his advantage to be speaking of. And when he's trying to cut deals with MBS, he doesn't want to be talking about them murdering journalists in Saudi Arabia.
But then, very seriously, Lorcan, tell us about the six Democrats that he wants, or he said he wanted put to death for so-called sedition. Not that they had said anything that would constitute sedition.
No, so six Democrats who are formerly kind of heavy hitters within the military or served in the military put out a video that basically said that the law is that you're allowed to say no to unlawful orders. So basically saying, if you're told to do something illegal, you don't have to do it. That's not treasonous. And they were just stating the law, okay? This significantly annoyed Donald Trump. Said it was seditious behaviour, punishable by death, and then he reposted people who said hang them, George Washington would, which led to, you know, loads of questions, loads of Republicans being asked, well, do you agree that, you know, Democrats, you know, should be put to death for this, etc. You know, there was this bizarre moment where his press secretary was asked if he wants to execute members of Congress, and she said, no, he doesn't. And it's like, we're at the point where that's a valid question based on the posting of the president. Look, I think from a strategic point of view, this is the right approach by the Democrats. I mean, you know, they need to do things that are provocative. They need to do things that are seen to support institutions. They need to do things that are seen to stand up to and annoy Donald Trump. And look, it's also a sign of a man who's, you know, he's been under pressure before, but he is under significant pressure at the moment. He's under significant pressure from his own party. His control over the Republican Party is, for the first time since his initial rise, not absolute. You know, you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is, you know, rose on the MAGA trend, you know, was a really, really significant MAGA supporter. She is now completely broke with Trump, in part because of his focus on foreign policy, but also on Epstein. He tried to kill the vote to release the Epstein files. He just wasn't able to do it. And you had Republicans who were just saying, no, I know Donald Trump wants us to do this, but, and in their own words, we're not going to protect or stand in front of pedophiles. So that's the situation that he's in. He knows he took a bit of a shellacking in the last elections. He knows the Republicans, even though they've got a favourable map and a favourable time, are in trouble in the midterm. So I think it's too early to even think about the next presidential election, the fight in American politics, and it's a totally different election with a different electorate. Is about the midterms, and Donald Trump knows he's under pressure, and he knows if he's a bad day there, he becomes a lame duck and he probably can't go for his third term, which is, I think, deep down what he wants to do. I don't think he's going to have the power to do it, but he definitely wants to do it.
Okay, let's move on then to Britain, because they've had their COVID inquiry, Elaine, and Boris Johnson, who in some respects people think is sort of a quasi-British version of Trump, has been absolutely excoriated in it, hasn't he?
He certainly has, along with Dominic Cummings and Matt Hancock, who was the health minister during COVID. So this is the second report and part two of a really in-depth inquiry into the COVID response in the UK. It runs at 800 pages, so I can't admit to having read the thing. But the report does seem to conclude that Boris Johnson oversaw a toxic and chaotic culture within government that led to poor COVID decision making. And obviously poor COVID decision making does inevitably mean that it led to people's deaths and often other struggles, whether they were health related or otherwise there. Interestingly enough, Boris Johnson hasn't come out and commented on the report, neither has Matt Hancock, but Dominic Cummings has, even though the report does slate Dominic Cummings as having an outsized impact for the role that he was in and actually kind of steering things towards a toxic and sexist workplace culture. He is called out in a number of ways. They do give credit where credit is due and say that he also did help drive the creation of COVID-19 task force and was a catalyst for taking action. So even though he's one of the few people in the report who actually seems to have been given some credit, he's the only one to have responded to it and has said that it's a vast rewriting of history and fails to challenge a version of events put forward by scientists. So he's obviously not happy with how he came across there. But it just speaks to the kind of disconnect that was in government at the time, where Boris Johnson is going around handshaking in hospitals and then trying to front a campaign of people promoting hand washing and less contact and things like that. So very disconnected advice, and nearly being cavalier about it as well in his communications.
The report isn't kind to Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionist Party either for the way they handled COVID up north. But let's move on. Why can't we have nice things, Lorcan? Now, I say this, a lot of people think that the new Bishop Lucy Park just beside the Grand Parade in Cork is a nice thing. But an awful lot of people are saying, why so much concrete?
Yeah, so they've paid $7 million, redeveloped the park, and there's a significant amount of concrete rather than green areas or playing spaces. There used to be a lot more grass there. They've taken away. There are some trees, but it's the design is more plaza than forest or greenery, okay? And look, I don't think it's fair maybe to put all of this on like one urban planner in Cork. I think it's a mistake, but you can't put it all, because I think at a policy level, Ireland gets this wildly wrong. Green spaces, forestry in urban areas is the trend. It is where we have to go, and it is incredibly important. One of the books that really changed my perspective on something was a book called The Well-Gardened Mind by a psychologist called Sue Stewart-Smith. It was around 2020 or 2021. And it talks about the biological effect on our health, on our mood of greenery, green spaces, that there's actually microbes in the soil that release serotonin and also have implants. It's proven, and there's really good science behind it, as well as the health impacts of even seeing green spaces. We're heading into climate change in a massive way. It is going to get hotter. We are going to need more shaded spaces. That's just like a pure reality of it. Concrete will be a disaster. We need more shaded spaces as we get into the 30 degrees on a more consistent level. It has to be government Irish policy to bring massive amounts of greenery into our urban spaces. Paris have started to do it, where they're bringing mini forests into the center of Paris in a massive way. Madrid have done it to the point that they have got 75 kilometres of forestry through the city. 75 kilometres is we can go from Dublin to Wicklow Town and back. That's what we're talking about there, of forestry within an urban area. Like, that's serious ambition on something that absolutely has to happen. So I think this is a symptom of piecemeal people making decisions based on one architect's plans, when it should be overarching policy that says you shouldn't be able to walk in an urban space without seeing greenery. Apartment buildings should have gardens on top of them. Houses should. We have to bring greenery for our health, for digital detox purposes, but also for climate change and shade.
Do you think it's possible that there was a decision not to put down grass because it's afraid that when grass gets wet, people slip in it and they take legal actions?
Possibly. Yeah, there might be a real kind of pragmatic decision on that, but I mean,
I'm not endorsing it. I wonder, was that thinking?
But see, you just don't think so laterally then, if that's the case. Like, be more creative about it. The grassy place parts could be parts that aren't applicable for you to walk on. They could be raised knolls and things like that. So you can see this in other cities where they've been creative about open spaces and made them functional and also beautiful and also green, and also, as well as like the extremes of shade that we'll need other protections against flooding and things like that. And there's a way to decide spaces that will actually help with that capacity and drainage.
Says, green spaces also help with preventing flooding. Concrete, not so much. Another listener points out, if you slip and fall on concrete, you can actually do yourself more damage than slipping and falling on grass.
That is very true. And also, what's really annoying to me about this is, like, you're calling it a park and it has no functionality for play. Like, there's not even a tiny semblance of a playground.
But that brings us to the playgrounds. And it seems that we have a major problem in this country as well. When you put playgrounds in, and I have seen this as well, going back many years, but it seems to be a trend again, of people deciding they want to set playgrounds on fire.
Yeah, and actually, I'm from the area in Coolock, and it is the talk of Coolock at the moment, the fact that this playground in Kilmore was burnt out, and it's expected to cost around €100,000 in damages. It's completely unusable as it stands. There was also an incident in Howth where some wooden benches were burned to a crisp. There was an incident in Lucan. There was an incident somewhere else.
Sorry, I can remember, and it's going back well over 10 years ago, a similar thing happening in Rathmines as well.
It happens in a lot of places. And I would say it's a real big hit, I would say, for the community in Kilmore, because I grew up around there, and the house that I spent most of my life in, that was within 5 minutes walking distance of no less than 3 primary schools, just got its first playground in the last few months. So there's also a lack of facilities in these areas, and it's kind of like, you can't just put a sticking plaster over these communities and say, job done, we gave you a playground, we're sorted. So what about all of the youth that grew up without those facilities, without anything to do with their free time and stuff like that, and are now disaffected and causing a nuisance and ructions and things like that? There is still a lack of facilities and a lack of support for youth engagement in communities, and that needs to change. If you want, it's not CCTV that's going to help this, it's community engagement, community involvement, community facilities.
Yeah, like there's some things, you try to look at everything logically, and then sometimes you do get emotional about things, and just think the idea of burning down a playground is, it just, you know, it's really, really, really aggravating. And it does make you think, yeah, look, CCTV, and, you know, throw the book at them, et cetera, et cetera. But we all know that's not the solution. We all know that doesn't work, and that's not actually what fixes these problems. I did have a little bit of an issue, you know, straight after the Independent TD, Barry Hennigan, you know, he said, I love our community, I love the North Side, but it's sad that a small proportion of vandalizing and attacking our infrastructure. Obviously, I agree with that, it's sad. I didn't like the fact that he did say, but after the North Side, as if it is just a North Side thing, because Matt, as you said yourself, it happened in Rat Mines. Sean Moore Park in Sandymount has been burnt down 8 or 9 times in the last 2 or 3 years. They've had to get rid of all the wood there, the thing. So it happens in North South, it happens across the country.
Listener says Waterford's People's Park regularly gets vandalised. Very sad, says that person.
And it's also happening really early. You know, it's 9 and 10 o'clock at night. It's not 2 o'clock in the morning. So it really does feel like there's something that we should be able to do to stop this issue. But then wider than that, I think you're absolutely right. It's a much wider issue than people burning down one playground.
Thank you very much, Lorcan Nyan from the Communications Clinic, Elaine Burke from our weekly TV and streaming spot on Monday.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.